Growing up as a child, I had fun. Apart from the fact that I was the only child of a very known pastor of a very big church. So I was a pastor's child. And the only thing I find very annoying is that, well, initially I didn't, but what I found annoying was the fact that everybody just felt like they had a say in my life. My parents didn't have kids early, and by the time I came into the picture, they were already like 12 years married. So I was somewhat of a special miracle baby, if you want to say that. You know how we do in Africa. Anyway, everything was fine. I was doing well. The church was going on. I would go to church with my mom or my dad or both of them. And my dad being one of the main pastors in one of the big parishes. He wasn't the general overseer or anything, but he was like very prominent. Everything about him was church. If I didn't know him, I would say he didn't even care about his family, but he was very devout. He was a very devoted Christian all his life. Everything about him was church. And, well, I started having issues when, at age 10, mom fell sick. She was so sick, she had cancer. And I remember praying as a child and begging God, please don't let mom die. Keep mom, please. I kept praying. I kept hoping. I see my dad perform miracles everywhere. And I was waiting for him to do that miracle and get mom to be well. Get mom healed. Heal her. Why can't you just heal her? I kept saying, it doesn't work like that, you know. I'm just a vessel that God uses. But all those things didn't make any sense to me. You heal random strangers. I've seen it happen. You know, those crusades and stuff. Why can't you heal my mom? Is it that you don't love her enough? I was like, it's all in God's hands. So is it that God doesn't love mom? Or God just decides or is partial about who he heals and who he wants to help? I was 10. I was angry. I couldn't wrap my head around it. Eventually, I watched mom deteriorate to the point that she was unrecognizable. My beautiful, vibrant mom just disappeared before my eyes. She withered away. I said that wasn't bad enough. When mama died, I was at home with one church member as usual and a mom's sister, and my dad was busy in church preaching. And when she died, all I wanted was to have my dad around. I wanted to be able to just cry and, you know, grieve with my dad. But he was in church. He was preaching. Even when he put the message, he didn't run coming home or anything. He stayed back and finished preaching till late in the night before he walked into the house. I was mad. I was angry. I didn't want to speak to him for days. But my little mind couldn't understand that he was also grieving in his own way. All I was thinking that he probably didn't love mom as much. Or the church meant more to him than his wife and child. Anyway, I tried to hate my father for it. But I couldn't, because even as young as I was, I knew, yes, he might have been able to perform miracles, but he's not the one doing it. I knew that well. I knew it was God that was doing it to him. So my anger was with God. Why would he heal random strangers? And then a woman who left everything to serve him, he couldn't heal her. He allowed her to die. And why would he make me come into this world through such a woman? when he knew he wasn't going to let her leave to see me grow old. You know, I was just angry with God so badly. Like, I didn't want to go to church, but I had no choice. It was a rule in my house. You must go to church. But midweek services, everything church, you have to go. So I from that moment, I didn't grow up with that love I was used to anymore. My father was just, it's like he buried himself deep, deep, deep into the work of God, according to him. Always traveling to preach and all that. So I was always left with either my auntie or one church member or the other. The only good thing is, I remember thinking, I can't wait to grow old, to get old enough to just leave this house and be on my own. The thing is, my mom had left me a huge sum of money in a trust fund. And the only problem there was that I couldn't access it until I was 21. So she died when I was 10. I got to find out about this trust fund when I was 13. I overheard my aunties talking, so I knew. And I did then some investigation of my own, and I figured out that, okay, it's true. So I have a huge amount of money in my name somewhere. So when I continued to live like that, I was in secondary school then. My dad, I guess he couldn't cope with me, or he didn't want to see me around, or I was a constant reminder of mom. He just bundled me and whisked me off to a boarding school. And that even broke my heart even more, because all I wanted at that time was my father. I wanted to spend time with my father. I wanted him to hold me and tell me everything's going to be okay. But instead, he chose the church. So I had a beef with the church, any church. And I had a beef with God. But up to that time, I didn't have control on whether or not I should go to church. It was not something I could protest about. I went to boarding school. Whenever I'm home on holiday, I spend my time mostly in church, church camp, youth camp, Sunday school, all those things. My father made me to join the choir. I could sing. I knew how to sing. I loved to sing when I was a kid, and I was already, you know, interested in joining the choir. And after mom died, I didn't want to do any of those things, but my dad insisted, so I kept doing it. So when I'm in school, they don't force us to go for fellowship or church on Sunday, so I never went to church. But when I came home, I just played the part. It was like I put on a different persona when I'm home. I just pretend, since we are all pretending. That was my thinking. I'll just pretend. I will act like I love it, but the moment I can run away, I will do it. And so I continued living this life until I was 18. And I finished secondary school, I was prepping to get into university. I'd gotten admission. I was really excited. Finally, I'm going to school in the university. And I was going to go far away from Port Harcourt, where we lived. I didn't want to have anything to do with my church. I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody that knew me, or knew my father, or knew my mother. You know, I just wanted to separate myself from it all. But 2 months before I had to go to school, I was at home, and I just come back from shopping for some school stuff. When it was a Friday. And we usually have this midweek service. It wasn't a vigil, just a normal midweek service, but there was a program going on in church, and it was Friday to Sunday. So that Friday, I got a call to wait at home. I don't go anywhere. Next thing, there was a knock on the door, and like pastors and the wives and many ministers from the church were just trooping in. What's going on? My dad is not home. They're like, sit down. I said, okay, I sat down. Did I do something? Did they catch me? What did I do? My brain was just thinking, well, I didn't do anything. I'm very Anyway, I saw that I was staring at them like, what's going on? Why is everybody here? And I said, well, sorry to inform you, but your dad passed away. I started laughing. Like, this is a joke. My dad just went to church to preach. Passed away to where? Hey, he passed away. He didn't pass here. They said, no. He preached, he finished his sermon, and he went into his office, and his secretary found him on his seat, dead. I'm like, this God must have a very sick sense of humor, man. I'm like, this is not happening. I was so angry. I didn't realize I was raising my voice. I was like, first he took my mom, and now my dad. So what next? Me? Why doesn't he just take me and let me know that he's done with wiping off the entire family from the face of it? What kind of God do you guys serve? And they were like, don't talk. I said, leave me alone. I will say what I want to say. I don't even believe that he exists anyway. I don't know you. You serve a God that's so partial, that's so mean. And what did I ever do to God? He took my mom when I was 10. 10 years old, guys. 10. And then now my dad, two weeks before I have to restart my life. He didn't even get to see me starting. I just got admission to university. Do you know that? But I'm leaving in 2 months. I was going to spend 2 weeks with him and then go spend 2 weeks with my uncle and come back and then he would take it. I was just ranting off. And I was crying and they were trying to console me. At the end of the day, they had to sedate me. And so I slept off. Anyway, let's just say the whole burial, the whole thing went, it was in the blur because I was just numb. I was so angry that I was too weak to do anything. There was nothing I could do. But I knew one thing. I'm not serving that God. I'm not going to be worshipping the God that was as mean enough to take away my parents from me. Parents that served him for the most of their life. Why? Why would he do that? I begged him to save my mom and he refused. And then while I wasn't even watching, he took my dad just like that. I was angry. But I just decided to bottle it all in. I said all I would say and I didn't want to repeat myself. My dad, burial was done. And, well, I expected them to, there was a will, right? Turns out, there wasn't any. Actually, the only thing was that my uncle called me and said, your dad asked me to give you this letter in case anything happens to him. And I'm like, what's that supposed to mean? I took the letter and I read it, and my dad told me, in the letter, he was like, he was sorry. He doesn't know. God can ever since mom died. Apparently, he had written that letter shortly after mom died, but my uncle had it. He said, "You know, your mom died, and I know it's hard on you and all that thing. But I just want to prepare you in case anything happens to me. I want you to know that you're gonna be okay. I have opened this account for you, and this is all I'm gonna be putting into some amount for you." Until you are 21. And your mom has done the same. And your mom left the sum of 20 million naira in an account in so bank. And I'm using a different bank this time. And I'm putting some money which you can only access when you are 21. That was the agreement I had with your mom. So in total, when I counted the whole amount of money I had, boy, I was a millionaire in the multiple sense. It was quite a huge sum, but I couldn't access it until I was 21. And at this time, I was 18. And then I'm like, how about the house? They're like, unfortunately, or should I say fortunately, Dad bought everything in the name of the church. He bought his house in the name of the church. I'm like, what was he thinking? Was he foolish or something? And like, well, the thing is that, since the church was the one paying him most times, because he was a full-time pastor, you know, he devoted himself and everything to the church, and I just didn't want to hear anymore. And I said, the house is not mine, and everything in it is not mine. When am I supposed to leave this house? They're like, no, you can stay. But the thing is that the new pastor and the family are going to move in by the end of next month. By that time, you should be in school, so that should be all okay for you. And you can just take what you value, and any other thing, like your father's personal belongings, mom's stuff has been long disposed of. It's just things that I kept of her. Like, I had a wrapper that she always tied when she was sick, and a scarf that she always had on her, you know, because her hair was falling off, so she always had a scarf on. Those were sentimental things, and I couldn't part with them. So those ones were always like living in my bag at the bottom of my suitcase. And I was like, what else? My mom's jewelry, I wasn't big on jewelry. But I kept them. I was like, maybe one day they'll come in handy. Or I will use them, or I will sell them, I don't know. Long story short, I like, you guys don't need to worry. I'll move out next week. My uncle, like, don't be ridiculous. They're like, how can my parents be so stupid? How can my father buy a house in the name of the church? This is the same church that he gave before his family. My anger rose again. But I just said, like, you know what? I don't even need to be pouring my anger on these people, because they my beef is with God. Because I don't know how God will brainwash this. How will somebody serve God so much? So much. And still die untimely like that. Why? Anyway, I moved in with my dad's sister and her kids, still in Port Harcourt, pending when I was going to leave for school. So my valuables, my mom's stuff, my box where I had my mom's stuff and all that, I took those stuff, that wrapper, the jewelry. I went into a bank. I asked for a safety deposit box. You know, I needed to keep it somewhere safe. I didn't want anybody to touch it, because when I was in my auntie's house, they were nice. They weren't mean, but you know, when you're not with your parents, you're not with your parents. You are a visitor in someone's house until you start becoming uncomfortable. Like, you stay in someone's house 1 week, 2 weeks, everybody's excited. But after 2 weeks, you become a pest. The auntie will, hey, go and grind pepper for me. You have younger kids that I am older than that should do these chores. I'm okay with doing chores, but don't send me errands when you see your children are right in front of you. Oh, come on, go and sweep the living room, or go and wash the dishes. Your children ate with those dishes. I didn't even eat the food. But I was just like, you know what? I'm just buying my time. I'll do everything. And once it was time for me to go to school, I left. I had taken care of my business. I left for school. My school fees had already been paid by my dad. And I had some money that he gave me for my upkeep for a year. So I told myself, look, I'm just going to look for a job until I can access this church fund, and then I'll be good. So that was the plan. So I went to school in Abuja. Like, I went all the way to the north. And that's it. I wanted to be far from me. I didn't want anything that would remind me of my parents. I didn't want them to know me, Bimbo, as Bimbo, the pastor's daughter, old poor little Bimbo, who lost her parent. No, I wanted to go to where nobody knew me. Nobody's going to be like, oh, she's this or she's that. And after all, she's a pastor's kid. No. So I left and I went to school. I was studying mechanical engineering. I love machines. I've always loved it. And that's why I chose that course. I know it was a male-dominated program in school. Even in Nigeria, the sector is dominated by men, but I figured I'll cross that bridge when I get there. So I went to school. I had a roommate, quite crazy roommate of mine, but she made school interesting for me. She was from the east, and it was Amaka. We call her Ami, because she's always saying, she went because she has this strong Igbotic accent. So when she comes there, hi, I'm Annie. I'm like, Awula. I'm like, okay, I'm Bimbo. She said, Bimbo. I say Bimbo, not Bimbo. She's like, oh, sorry. Well, we got along very well, Ami and I. Ami was somewhat crazy. She's just this kind of girl that she falls in love easily, according to her. Not according, she just thinks, oh, if you just come and whisper good things, sweet words to her ear, she's loving you already. And that was my problem with her, because she's always changing boyfriend. First, you're dating Maxwell. And then, Ebuka is coming to tell you things, or Ebuka walk you from school 2 times in the week and pay for your ride and pay for your lunch. You have started loving Ebuka. Before you know it, you've broken up with Maxwell and you're dating Ebuka. And then when Ebuka is done with you, he has gotten what he wants, he starts to mess up. You say, oh, guys are just so mean. Men are scum. And me? I wasn't really interested in dating, though. I tried my hands on it in my second year. I dated a final year student. And let's just say, the moment he graduated, the relationship ended because he wasn't even based in the North. He was based in Lagos. And I was not ready to do that commute. I liked him, but not that much. Not to the point where I'm ready to be going to Lagos to go and visit my boyfriend. Mm-mm. Still thinking about my life. I have a lot on my plate. So I studied for 4 years. By the time I graduated university, actually 5 years in Nigeria, engineering is 5 years. So I got into school at 18. I graduated at 23. By this time, I had accessed my trust fund. I had everything, all the documents in my name. I had access to anything I wanted. So while I was getting ready to graduate, I was like, okay. When I graduated, I was very sad. It was sad because I watched my classmates and their family members celebrate. And I didn't want to be that child that everybody was feeling sorry for. Oh, poor her, no family. But Amy was nice. She wanted me to like, oh, why don't you join my own celebration crew? Like, nah, Amy, I have to go to Port Harcourt. As in, I'm just going to stay long enough to get my certificate, my testimonial, and then graduation testimonial, and then I'm out. I'm taking the next bus or flight, whichever one, to Port Harcourt. She was like, won't you go stay and party a little bit? Yeah, there's time for that one. I'll meet you up later. I'll hook up somehow, but I just need to go to Port Harcourt. Something came up. Actually, what my plan was, I wanted to go and see my parents. I was going to the graveside to pay my respect again. It's been 5 years. I hadn't gone there since my father was buried. So I had this longing to just be close to my parents again. And so I took a flight from Abuja to Port Harcourt. I stayed in a hotel. I didn't carry a lot of stuff, just an overnight bag, because I was just going to spend the weekend and go back to Abuja and, you know, rent an apartment. You know, my hostel was still, although it was mostly emptied out, I didn't really have much. I asked Amaka to take my stuff to her place, and then I would come to Onitsha, where she's based, and get my stuff when I'm ready. I didn't tell her how long I was going to be in Port Harcourt for. So she, when her parents came to uphold her things to what Onitsha, they took mine as well. And I went to see my parents. I just sat there. They're buried side by side, so it wasn't hard to locate them. I told them about my years in school. I didn't mention anything about God or my religious belief or anything. Just how I told them how I missed them, and I graduated engineering. I'm an engineer now, Mom. I'm an engineer now. You would have been proud of me. You know, I cried. I was alone, so I cried. I missed my parents. I was, for a second there, I became that 10 years old girl that was lost, you know. So after spending like, I think I ended up staying almost an hour there, I came out of the cemetery, still very blue, very sad. I just flag the first. Usually, I would call an Uber, and then I would, before I get into the Uber, I take pictures of the plate number, even the driver, and I would send it to my friend, like, hey, in case anything happens to me, find this guy, find this guy. You know, this kind of thing, just to be safe. But that day, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention. So I flagged this cab, and I got in. I was having this splitting headache. So I just sat at the back, rattled off the name of my hotel. I put my bag in front of me, so I like wrapped my hand around my bag, you know, safety first, right? I laid back my head and I just, and that was how I slept off. I don't know what happened. All I know is that when I woke up, I found that I was on the floor in some kind of a forest. I don't know, because when I opened my eyes, it was hard to pry my eyes open because it was heavy with sleep. I was trying to come out of this sleep. And then there was this stench, this disgusting smell of, have you ever been to where they kill, where they slaughter cows, an abattoir, where they slaughter animals? It smelled like that. Blood and guts and decaying stuff, and there was flies. And when I prayed my eyes open, just slightly, the first thing that my eyes zeroed in on was a weird-looking man wearing red with this white chalk-looking thing around his eye. I knew that was an herbalist. Babalawo, like they call it. Eh? Wait. It's like all the senses in my body just came alive. And I opened my eyes. I tried to look around my surroundings. I noticed some people crying. Like women, kids. I turned to the other side. I noticed 5 men, one of which I remembered was my driver. My bag was no longer on my hand, so my phone, where will I see that one? I was just like, God, in my mind, I'm like, if this is a dream, I need to close my eye again. I think if I close it and open it, I'll wake up in where I should be. Closed it, opened it, closed it, opened it. Nothing. I'm still where I am. The Babalawo was making incantations, flinging a chicken up and down. Like, before you knew it, he wrung the neck and cut off the neck of it. Blood splattered everywhere. People screamed. I jumped. I only jumped out of my skin. I also screamed because I felt cold. I felt scared. I was too scared to even move from that spot. Even when they dragged somebody in and tossed the person into, because we were all cramped into a kind of like a hut. So all these things I was seeing were through an opening, and they just threw in another new girl. And I looked around me and I noticed there were lots of girls inside the hut and some kids, like about 5 kids, different ladies, old, younger. Hey, the next thing, they just came in like, everybody, file out. And we all scrambled out of the hut. And we said, oh yeah, single file. We all lined up in a long straight line. And they said, yeah, take a number. 1, 2, 3, 4. By the time they finished counting, we were about 50 adults. And then they now say, if you are an even number, stay on this side. That is from 2, 4, 6, 8. Come to the right. If you're an odd number, go to the left. I remember I was number 6, so it was an even number. So I went to the right, and the rest went to the left. And the Babalawo was still doing what he was doing. And I said, hey, odd numbers. The Babalawo was like, these ones, pointed to the odd numbers for rituals. They're going to be slaughtered immediately. They were screaming. I was like, hey, what will now happen to me? These ones, they're for sale. Huh? Wait, let me get this right. The even numbers, we are going to be trafficked and sold off. The odd numbers, we're going to be killed. Before I could even wrap my head around it, they've already dragged somebody down and cut off her head. Bam! Right before my eyes, this head just rolled off. I had to I nearly vomited. I was shaking like a leaf. But not once did I pray. Not once did I. All I was like, this is the end for me. Maybe this is God's way of telling me it's time for you to come. After all, I've taken your parents. Silly, I was still mad. Hey, I was like, who will save me? God obviously doesn't care. So who will save me? I cried. When they marched us off, we that were going to be still. So they just marched us off into a bus and started driving. I now know where did the carriers go. I don't know where we're going. All I know is that we were just driving for hours until we got to, still in the forest. We came out to the open road. We ended up entering into another bush and came into, we got in front of a house. It's like an abandoned building, but it was, it's like, it was completely built with doors and everything, but it was abandoned. Nobody lived, because the way it was, it felt like a ghost house. Like nobody was living there. Just pushed us in. We entered. Come and see those rich men. Allege them. They just, I think the smell of their perfume alone, you'd be like, people are here. So what they did, they blindfolded us. And they told us to line up in a single file. They lined us up. I was shaking. I'm very sure I peed myself several times because I was wet. And I started hearing 2 million, 7 million. What's going on? Sold. We're being auctioned off. And before I know it, the thing stopped. I was still standing here. Nobody took me. Nobody. So that means I'm not being sold. Or what? I don't know. What's going on? And then we all were pushed in. Like, we ended up remaining out of 25 of us. That were the evil numbers. About 15 were sold. 10 of us remained. And like these ones, we could sell them online. Nothing they happen. Allergy. We don't make better money. All this kind of thing. And someone came like, yes, yeah. There's somebody, get one delivery, go do tomorrow. I was saying, for which side? He said, just if you enter town, get this club. He called the name of the club. He said, hey, when you enter, ask for Mr. Francis. You go, in fact, you don't miss him. Because the guy, if you see him, you go, no. He hold it. He will drive expensive car. He said, what do you call her? Just ask for Mr. Francis. I do not know what the guy here do. Because the next day, I know it was early. I was bundled up, thrown into a car. Two people sat beside me. And we drove into town. And we kept going. When we got to where, we got somewhere, we came out. And like, you sure said, we no go there. Since we now the one night, we go meet this Mr. Samson. Now Samson talk. I think now Francis says, shut up, now Samson. Mr. Samson, okay. It's just in the call, but you won't call. Are you calling now? I was just like, this guy, I know that the person said Francis because I heard Francis. But who am I to correct them? They said Samson. Okay, well, at that time I didn't even care. All I know that who is this Mr. Samson or Mr. Francis? And what does he want with me? Why am I? I knew something, this is not gonna end well. So we were in that hotel, and we lodged in a motel. And then one said, look, your job not to watch her. If you sleep with them or anything, you come and know the jazz with their body, we don't catch you. I mean, you know the jazz we'll grab for our head. If we touch the merchandise, we die. So you touch this one, we die. I said, no go touch, I'm not my type, I beg, sacrifice. Who they chop a ball? No, I beg, a war. Okay. That's how they took me into this motel room. They told me to rest where. They came back, like, gave me food. I can't remember. This would have been like, in my head, I've been in their custody for I don't know how long, 2 weeks at this point. And I know I can count in my palm of my hand how many times they fed us. Sometimes they don't even bother coming with food. As in, we've got to do with peeing and drinking our urine. That's how bad it was. I remember when I had to do it because I was very thirsty after crying for water. That they abandoned us and leave us dead. Nobody comes to check on us. They might come like 2 days later and give you food. I knew I lost weight. And that was the least of my problem. I had had to drink my urine because I was thirsty. I'd had to fight with someone for just a piece of bread. As in, it was the survival of the fittest. Sometimes someone will say, they'll come in with food, it's not enough. We'll have to just ration it and share it. The ones that are praying in my head, I'm like, if only God was real, if only God would answer. Because at least one or two that I heard praying, they got sold off. So that just cemented my disbelief that, you know, God wasn't good. God wasn't nice. And so that afternoon, I finally slept on a bed. They fed me. And the real food, they gave me amala. They asked me, what do you want to chop? I was too scared. They said, you know, go talk now. Chop. Anyway, you want to chop amala? I nodded, yes. They brought amala, brought away meat. I said, look, if I'm going to die, let me die. I'm hungry. I ate the food. They say, sleep. Your work will start for night. I was terrified. But they left me. I know they didn't leave me alone because they just left me to lie on the bed. They sat down. They were guarding me like this, like a hawk. Around 6 p.m. because there was a clock in the room. They woke me up. They're like, okay, oh yeah, go bath. They gave me toothpaste, toothbrush. They gave me soap to shower. Then they laid on the bed, a very short, revealing dress. I've never seen that kind of dress before, and at least I never owned one. Come on, I was a church girl, a church kid, pastor's child, even though I wanted to rebel. But dressing skimpy, scandalous, it wasn't my style. I had my style. This dress barely covered my ass. My boobs were everywhere, and I was very endowed in that area. Busty. You know? And after taking a shower, and then they gave me a ridiculously high heel that I could barely walk on. But hey, I just had to pray, God, let me not fall, please. Hey, make a no follow. In my mind, imagine, you know where you, in desperate time, you find yourself calling on God, even though you claim not to believe. But the weirdest thing happened to me when I was sleeping. My mom appeared. And she said, you know you're going to be okay. I was crying. Mom, save me. If you were really in heaven, ask God to save me. If God is real, let him send me a helper. And I promise, this is all happening in a dream. I promise I will never go a day without praising him, without praying, without serving him. I will dedicate my whole life to serving him. But my mom just smiled at me and said, you're going to be okay. And that was when, next thing I heard, somebody tapped me and I woke up. I, you know, these hot tears, when I got into the shower, I cried as the water was pouring on down my face. I cried. I said, I decided to pray. So I said, God, if indeed you are real, because Lord, you know you have hurt me so much. See me, how humble, right? I said, but if truly, truly, you are the God that my dad believed in, the God that my mom served until she died, the God that can do all things, then send me help. Get me out of this situation. And I promise, just like I told mom, I will serve you for the rest of my life. And I would tell anybody that wants to hear that you are real. Like, you never finished. I just hurried up and came out and I dressed up. Like, which time would they go meet the Mr. Sansi? I say, Mr. Sansi, Nah, 9 o'clock, the same movie time. For that club, yes. Okay. I finished getting ready. We got into the car. We drove into Port Harcourt City. There was a club. This club was known to have strippers. You know, I don't know how to explain this club. It was a strip club / ashawo joint. So, as we were parked, a car, a Range Rover Sport, white, came out and parked right next to us. I said, nine minutes. Eh? And he came out, knocked on the person's window. The person went down. And they said, hey, Oga, your consignment there. Then they went down and they showed my face. And this man, I don't think they saw the look of confusion in his face, but I saw it. And he was like, excuse me. They said, boss, with the non said, they said, exchange words. Nothing they happen. We don't receive a lot. More put down for your car. The guy was just there and he said, yes. I don't know whether he was quick thinking or anything. But before I knew that, I was being transferred from their vehicle into the vehicle of a strange man, apparently whose name was Samson. And maybe they put me in the drover. And this man started the car and started driving. He said, whatever you do, do not scream, do not say anything. Let's just get out of here. I was looking at him. I was even too terrified to say it, and he could see the fear in my face. So he drove straight. I knew that we were no longer in Port Harcourt by the time he stopped. We were out at the outskirts of Port Harcourt. And then he went, he parked the car somewhere, and he turned to me. And he said, I do not know what happened, but those guys obviously thought I was somebody else, and they gave you to me. And from the look of things and the look on your face, you look terrified. I just want you to know that I have nothing to do with whatever is going on. I was just looking at him. He said, first of all, what's your name? I said, Bimbo. He said, good. I'm Samson. I said, okay. He said, do you have somewhere to go? Can I take you somewhere? I was too terrified to be on my own. I told him no. Like, anyway, it's going, I'll follow him. He said, but I'm only in Port Harcourt for a short time. That he started explaining himself. I had come to that place to look for a convert, a new convert that I heard had come back into backslidden. So I wanted to find him and lead him back to Christ. And I was, to my greatest surprise, this happened. I don't know what's going on, but I just feel God was looking out for you. And when he said God, I started crying. I'm like, what? I said, I prayed today. He said, well, that's good. I said, you don't get it. I prayed today after almost 6 years of not talking to God. I'm like, really? I had dreamt, my mom had appeared to me in the dream and she told me I was going to be okay. And then when I woke up, I prayed. I was just rattling up. I prayed and I told God that if he should send me help, I will serve him and I will never ever go against him and I would tell anybody I know about God. So I'm like, calm down, relax. Okay, I get you. You prayed. Okay. I was so angry. I was so angry with God. I never knew who he was real. I didn't believe that he was real anymore. He took my mom and he took my dad and I was angry and I didn't pray and I didn't go to church. Nothing. I was just too angry. And today you prayed. Yeah. And he sent help. Yeah. And I was crying. I was bawling. And he just sat down quietly and allowed me to cry my eyes out. He handed me a handkerchief and I cleaned my face, blew my nose. They're like, sorry, I will wash it. Don't worry, keep it. So I started telling him my entire story, how I ended up with these kidnappers after going to see my parents, that I just want to leave Port Harcourt. That whatever happens, you should just take me out of Port Harcourt. They were like, don't you have any other family members? I said, I don't even know if I haven't spoken to anybody in my family. Any of my aunties and uncle, they don't really call me, so I'm not close to anybody. He was like, okay, here's the thing. I'm flying out to Lagos tomorrow evening. You wanna come? I was like, I don't have anything. My phone, I don't know anybody. He said, it's okay. Do you trust me? I said, right now, I don't have a choice. You're the only person that has spoken to me like a normal human being. You're the only person that has helped me since my ordeal. So, yes. Well, I could. You go to Lagos. I'll take you to Lagos with me. And then we'll sort out your things and your how to get in touch with your family. Like, okay. And the next day, we drove into Port Harcourt Airport. Got into what I got to understand as a private plane. Just the two of us in the whole, it was a small plane. It was just the two of us and the air crew. I was in shock. He first of all took me to, you're like, okay, you wanna, I'm staying in a hotel. I could pay for a room for you. I'm like, no, please, don't leave me alone, please. I beg you, please don't. What if they come back? I was terrified. I said, okay, fine. So we go to the hotel room. He kept me in his room. It was a very massive room, trust me. And then, have you eaten? I said, they fed me around 12, and that's it. I'm like, are you hungry? I said, not really. He said, but you have to eat something. You really look malnourished right now. I'm like, you don't know the half of it. You don't know the half of what I've been through. Oh, thank you, God. You're like, you know what? Can we pray together first? At that point in time, if he had said, can we jump? I will jump. I'm like, sure. And in the most calm way, he just held my hand and said, Lord, thank you for this soul that you have found. Thank you for leading her to me. I do not know your plan, but as your servant, I am always willing to do your will. Jehovah, direct us and help us. Help me to know what to do. Help her to know what her next would be. We commit every of our step from this moment on to your hands. Thank you once again, Father. Amen. Very simple. And I said, amen. So I sat down on the bed. He ordered room service. It was rice and Fanta. Rice, plantain, jollof rice and plantain, chicken, Fanta. I remember the food. I have not eaten in days. So yes, it felt like the most amazing feast I've ever had. So we got talking, asking where I was from. I told him I'm from Ondo State, but I grew up in Port Harcourt. My father was pastor these days. My mom, I'm like, oh yeah, I knew him. I've been to his church once. I said, but who are you? Are you a pastor? He's like, no, not really. But I do the work of God. I'm a servant of God. I'm like, yeah, in what sense? Like, okay, the thing is, I'm a missionary. And I was in I came into Nigeria for my friend's wedding. He's getting married. Actually, not getting married in Nigeria, but I came in for the traditional wedding and I'll be flying out for his white wedding in the Caribbean. I'm like, okay. He's like, when we get to Lagos, we're going to go see them. You don't have where to go. Yeah? Would you like to meet my friend? I'm like, what does one have to do to be in the mission? I just asked innocently. He was like, there's no special thing to do. If you want to do it, you just do it. As long as it's what God has called you to do. Like, okay, so I was just pondering things in my head. I was eating. I couldn't finish the food. You know, when you have not eaten for so long, it's very hard for you to eat so much at one time. The amala I ate earlier, I had to force myself to down it because I didn't think I was ever going to see any food again, or when I was going to see any food again. But this time around, there was this sense of peace I felt around this gentleman called Samson. And I couldn't explain it, but I didn't feel threatened by him or anything. And that was why I was bold enough to, like, I felt that I had no other choice. I followed him everywhere. I said, this man, I'm going to you. Until I can find my way or find my phone or get in touch with someone, it's me and you. So the next day we flew to Lagos on a private plane, Dimension, yeah. And when we got to Lagos, and before we left Port Harcourt, he had gotten me, I had to borrow one of his shirts and trousers. I was very skinny. So he gave me some sweatpants and a t-shirt. I practically disappeared inside. So we had to fold the sleeve and tie the, it had a rope, a string at the waist, so I was able to tie it. But it was like when you hung clothes on the hanger, I was looking ridiculous inside. But it was all good. I had clean clothes that were decent, even though they were horrible looking, but decent. So like, I don't know how he managed to get me to fly without a passport, but I did. I cannot explain that one. When we got to, turns out that before we left for Lagos, he arranged for someone to bring the passport for me. Because that day, things were still kind of a daze. That afternoon, when we, that night when we got to his hotel, at the outskirts of Port Harcourt, he called someone like, okay, I know someone in the immigration will get your passport sorted, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't paying attention, okay? I was just going through my ordeal. My brain was processing all I had been through. I was just processing it. I would cry. Sometimes I would just break down into tears. And sometimes I would just stop crying. I would start laughing hysterically. I'm free. I'm no longer number six. But it was very hard to fall asleep. That's for sure. I was up 3 a.m. I was like, try to sleep. Like, I can't. I can't sleep. So he stayed awake with me, telling me stories about his mission in Gabon and all the places he has been to as a missionary. And I just was listening until I didn't know when I fell asleep. By the time I woke up, it was daybreak, like 10 a.m. in the morning. I startled awake. First, it took me a few seconds to like register where I was. And then last night's event came playing back in my head, and I was remembering, okay, fine, this happened. I was giving to this man, blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then someone came, took some pictures of my, like a passport photo of me. And by that evening, I had a passport in my hand with my full name. So the next day, we flew to Lagos. When we got to Lagos, Muritala Mohammed Airport, that was my first time ever in Lagos. I hadn't been to Lagos before. But I stuck to him the way I was walking, and he didn't even mind. That's the thing. I held on to him. When the moment we came down from the plane, I was holding him. We passed through customs, I was holding him. I would just let go of him, short, just enough to answer questions or hand over my head. I held on to him, we kept going. And you know now, private jet. We went through customs, but we didn't go through those long queue. And within a short time, we're out of the airport and heading inside Lagos. There was a car. There was a driver. We both sat at the back. And first, we drove to a house, which was his house. And I'm like, would you like to freshen up, take a nap, shower? I'm like, a shower would be nice. So he showed me to a room. I took a shower. He like, what's your size? I looked at myself. I'm like, I don't know right now. I've lost so much weight. But I think I should be a size 10 now. I'm like, okay. You know what we're going to do? Shower. Put on. Give me a new set of shirt and joggers. I'm like, let's go. We went to a store and got a few things, like some jeans and t-shirts and dresses, just a couple of things that like toiletries that I would need just to feel normal again. And then he took me, we drove to his friend's place. There were other people there, some guys, the couple that were getting married. They're like, hey, Sam. They were like, Samson, hey, what's up? Long time. And I just quietly stood by his side. We're like, Samson, aren't you going to introduce us? We're like, Bimbo, meet everybody. Everybody meet Bimbo. I'm going to explain. I will introduce you to them later. They're like, looking at him like, what's going on? He just mouthed. So we talked marriage plans. I just sat down quietly. They offered me a glass of water because I asked for water. I drank. Yeah. I've never appreciated water the way I did after I came out of the gift of having to take a bath, having to drink water without questioning. That's a gift. That's a huge gift. And I will never take that for granted. I drank my water. I was just sipping my water gently. The lady is, oh, what did you just tell me the fair thing? Yeah, people won't join us in the kitchen and leave these men to their talk. So I joined them in the kitchen. I imagined something was explaining my situation to them. So because I could hear him talking, and I knew, you know, I could just hear some words, and I knew he probably talking about me. It was understandable. He had to explain who I was. They're like, easy. I just heard someone shout and I lie. You're like, I kid you not. Say, wait, how in the world do you look like a traffic? I said, did they write it on their forehead? I don't know how these people would mistake me for someone that came to buy a human being. They were like, this is God. So when I came back into the kitchen, into the living room, they all started hugging me. Like, this God is amazing. Like, oh my God, I don't know what you have been through, but girl, you're safe now, okay? You're safe. We're gonna take good care of you. I started crying again. Like, did I say something wrong? Apparently, that was, I can't remember their name. I keep mixing them up. But I think that was Paul or okay that said that at that time. I don't remember who exactly. Oh, he was like, and I said, no, it's not you, sorry. Like, and the ladies came and they filled them in. She was like, what? Are you kidding me? In this Nigeria, I know that this kidnapping thing has gone haywire, but eh? My dear, you are so strong. How are you still? I was shaking. I'm like, Samson was like, it's just been barely 48 hours since she came out of that ordeal, so she's still trying to detox. And you know, they're like, so, do you need anything? See, this is my number, eh? If you need to talk, that was Paul's wife, Kelechi. Like, you need to talk to anybody, I'm here for you, okay? Just think of me as your big sister, okay? I say, okay. And, Ifani's wife as well, like, I'm also here for you. I started crying again, you know, and, well, long story short, they started planning to buy, and apparently the new bride didn't know that she was going to have a destination wedding. It was right in front of her that they discussed everything. That was when I found out who Samson was. Apparently, Samson used to work in the oil and gas sector. He owns a company that supplies oil and gas in Nigeria. And, well, the company practically runs itself. He just breezes in and out of Nigeria and focuses on his mission work.
most of the time. So when you say this guy is balling in cash, he is. But you will never know because he looks so humble, so simple. And he has the most gentle voice. I don't know, maybe because I've been around hoodlums or touts or evil men. But his voice has a way of calming me down. Like when we went back to his house, I remember I was taking a nap and I was having a bad dream. I was remembering I was in the coding camp again. But this time, I wasn't in the even number room. I was in the odd number room. So I started crying. I said, no, I'm not an odd number. I'm an even number. I'm number six. And I screamed, I'm number six. And he busted into the room like, calm down. It's okay. You're dreaming. I opened my eye. I started crying. Because I hadn't told him the details. I just told him, I was kidnapped, I found myself here, blah, blah. And so that, you were like, you want a cup of tea? You want to talk about it? So we went to the living room and he got me a warm cup of chamomile tea. And I went, what was the dream about? And I told him, like, how they shared us into two groups, even numbers and odd numbers. And the odd numbers were slaughtered right in front of me. Was like, Jesus Christ, really? I said, yes. I saw someone's head roll. And then I saw them cut off somebody's head. In fact, the first thing I saw when I opened my eye was a herbalist, a babalawo, bear killing a chicken with his bare hands. As if that wasn't terrifying enough. They killed children. They cut their head off right in front of me. They killed children. They killed people. Were most ladies. I didn't notice any men. Were mostly ladies. They were cutting people's parts, cutting off heads, breasts, as in they were taking orders. How many breasts you want, left or the right? Okay, they'll call somebody and I'll cut off the head, cut off one hand. So give me only the ring finger, give me only the pinky finger. Like, I'm gonna have 50 kill, as in. I saw them auctioning human parts like they were buying meat from an elero, you know, a meat seller. That's what I watched. That's what I saw. The smell, I can't get the smell off my head. It's like it's stamped in my mind. I was shaking. And at this point, he just hugged me. I'm like, you're safe. You're okay. You're okay. Like, I don't even know where my phone is. I don't know how to contact anybody in my family. I don't really have anybody that I'm talking to contacting anyway. My auntie hasn't bothered to reach out to me ever since I left the house. My father's family, I don't know if they care if I exist or not. Nobody has. I spent 5 years in university studying engineering and nobody called me for one day to ask me how I'm doing. I guess they're all angry because before my parents died, they set up a trust fund for me, and I had some money kept aside for me, quite a lot of money, and well, none of them could get their hands on it. So I guess they figured since I'm well taken care of and my parents left money for me, I didn't need anybody. So nobody calls, nobody checks on me. And I thought even God had left me until he sent you. I'm like, I'm telling you, that was so pure. In fact, that's the hand of God because I wasn't there for you. I didn't even know that kind of things happen at that place. I only went there to look. Look, I had preached to someone, a man who was into drugs. I had gotten him to go to rehab. But I got a call that he escaped from rehab and he has relapsed on his truck. So I was looking for him when I went to that place. I pulled up there. That was my final stop to search. But because of what had happened, I couldn't go in and search for him. So that's why you heard me on the phone and I called my colleague. And yeah, well, did they find him? Well, Unfortunately, they did, but he had OD'd. He OD'd on some drug, and we found him behind where I picked you, the back of the club there. He was already dead, laying in his own body waste, vomit. I'm like, oh wow, so sorry. Like, it's okay. And sometimes there's some souls that are, you know, you try your best. As a preacher, your only thing you can do is just introduce them to God and try. You try. The rest is left up to God. I'm like, yeah, I get it, but I can't understand something. If God is so good, why does he allow bad things to happen to good people? Like, I don't understand. He said, look at my mom. She was the most amazing human being. And I'm not saying that because she's my mom. Ever since, for the little time I got to spend with her, she was the most loving and charitable person I've ever met. She spent her time cooking for people. She's always opening her doors to people. She's always giving. She was always smiling. Even in her deathbed, she was always smiling. And she was always singing and praising God. But he still let her die. That's not fair. And as if that wasn't painful enough, my dad died just after preaching. He was doing God's work. He was preaching. He went to a crusade. He preached. He finished. He went into his office and he just sat down there on his chair and he passed on just like that. He was like, look, I can't claim to understand the mind of God. All I know is that God allowed certain things to happen for a reason. You might not understand it when it's happening, but I think eventually you will get to understand why he allows certain things to happen to certain people. Like, is it that he doesn't love me? Is it that he doesn't care about me? He said, no, not that far from it. God loves all his children. Whether you believe in him or not, he loves you. But I can't tell you that I know why the parents had to die when they did. But just know that he never left you. All through your time, when you were angry at him, he was by your side. You went through school, he was with you. This ordeal, I promise you, God has been with you. I guess he just wanted to help you to remember who he is in your life. And I was just staring at him. Like, it might just be his will telling you, all you have to do is call me and I will show up. But if you don't call me, if you don't open your heart for me, you see, the Bible says, behold, I stand at the door and I knock. Anyone who opens, you have to open that door, the door of your heart, and you have to let him come in. And you have to give him complete control of your life. If not, everything is just not going to make sense to you. You're going to keep having that hole that's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and feel more empty every day, because no one can fill that space. He's got you. He loves you. But I was so angry. I was so hurt and I was angry. And he understands. But he doesn't hold it against you. Because at the end of the day, you came back to him. You called on him. You asked him to help you. And he showed up. He sent me. And I didn't even know that he was sending me to do something. I didn't even know that I was being used by God to do something as miraculous as getting you out of the lair of human traffickers. I said, do you know one funny thing? He said, well, actually, when the order was to take me to a Mr. Francis, but the two dumbass, sorry for my French, because I'm so glad they're dull. Like, what? Well, one of them said one of them mistook Francis for Samson. And the other one said, but I didn't say Francis. And he said, no, not Samson. And like, call boss me. I said, none of them was going to call the boss. None of them were willing to call the boss. And so they decided to go with Samson. And coincidentally, you showed up. You were supposed to meet Mr. Sam Francis, who drove a white Range Rover Sport with so-so plate numbers. And apparently your plate number looks kind of, they didn't read it completely. They just saw that some numbers were similar. Your name was Samson and you were in a white Range Rover. And so they concluded that it was you. And, well, the rest is history. He was like, oh, good God. For real? That how it happened? I said, yes. He was like, amazing. Oh, wow. God is amazing. Do you know that? I'm like, right now, yes, he is. He really is. My mom was right. Your mom? Yeah. Just before we left, I was asleep. And she visited me in the dream. And she told me everything was going to be okay. I didn't, at that point in time, I didn't know how it was going to be okay. I didn't see any way out. But I had this great urge to pray when I got into the shower. And I just poured my heart out. I don't know if I made sense in what I was saying, but I just told God to save me. And if he saved me, I was going to serve him. I was going to come back full-hearted. Just save me, you know. And yeah, here I am. I'm like, yeah, here you are. Like, so, are you hungry? I look at the time, like, it's 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. You didn't have dinner. Like, not really. Well, do you have any ice cream at home? So, like, yeah, I always have ice cream. I always have ice cream at home. Like, what flavors? I have chocolate, I have vanilla. Like, you can't do better than chocolate and vanilla. I'm like, oh, really? Let me tell you. Have you ever tried cookie and cream ice cream? Well, all those things are too fancy. Vanilla is classic. Chocolate is dreamy. You can never go wrong. I'm like, ah, that's therefore it is. Because you haven't tried cookie and cream. And we just started laughing. Funny how we got along so much, you know? I'm like, so what's going to happen to me? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, I don't know how to go back to my life. I don't know where to start from. At Finnish University, I didn't really have any plans on what to do next. I just wanted to go see my parents and like, well, how about we go for a wedding first in the Caribbean? I said, well, you were invited. You just came from Ifeanyi's house, right? I said, yes. He invited you for his wedding. Yeah, it's gonna happen in the Caribbean. I've never been abroad. Okay, that's the first time for everything. You've never been to Lagos, right? Well, yeah, in Lagos, yes. Uh-huh. So, Caribbean. I was like, wait, is this a joke? He just laughed, like, I'm getting you ice cream. Think whatever you like. Like, I just kept pondering on it, like, what sort of a man is this? How can he be so comfortable with a stranger, so relaxed? Like, wow. Anyway, the following week, we traveled to the Caribbean. We didn't go with the bride and groom. We went in his own plane. See, I got to understand about the Brothers of Christ. Apparently, their mission group of 6 guys, formed by 6 men, and these men they travel around the world to third world countries, even just anywhere that they needed to be, where the help is needed or not. They go, they preach the gospel, they go to the rural areas, they preach the gospel, they help the people. And I think what they do was amazing. So I'm like, okay, we're going to the Caribbean. But we, the thing is, some of us got there earlier than the other. Like, for some reason, he said, can we, I know the wedding is next week, it's this weekend, but we're going to have to leave early. Like, okay, yeah, because I have groomsman duties, okay, we got clothes to fit into and all those things. I said, well, okay, is there any way I could help? I'm like, first of all, you have to go to the bank and get your new cards and sort out your financial things. You said your bag was stolen and your cards, and only God knows how much is left in that card, in that account. I'm like, well, they don't have your PIN card code, so there's no way they could withdraw money from your card. Like, okay, but I won't put it past them. Like, let's just go to the bank tomorrow. What bank is that? I said, the bank. So, okay, let's go. We went there. I collected a new card. I told them I wanted to see my safety deposit box. I got in there, took out a jewelry set from my mom's collection and her scarf. I wanted to have her close to me. I don't know why, but I just wanted to just have her close to me. I think it gave me comfort. So I took it with me back to Samson's place. And then I'm like, I'm going to need some clothes. I had money to take care of myself. I have a card. I can pay for my bills. So I was, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to take you shopping and let you pay. I'm like, but I can pay. He said, I know. You're a millionaire. But right now, you are in my custody. You were handed over to me by God. And I will do everything right. I will take care of your bills. I'm like, I don't know how I'm ever going to be able to repay you for all this kindness. I'm like, did I ask for a repayment? I said, no. He said, then let's not talk about repayment. I'm not doing this because I want something out of it. Okay. So we traveled. We went shopping. I bought a few things. And then we went to the Caribbean. Well, our first night, we stayed in the same hotel, but we didn't stay in the same room. At this point, you know, we had to, you know, there were boundaries. We don't really know each other like that. We're friends, though. In my eyes, he can do no wrong. He's my savior. Although God saved me. So when we got there, he was like, I have a surprise for you. I'm like, okay, what's that? Anything bigger than flying me all the way to the Caribbean from Nigeria? I don't know. Like, you'll see. And so apparently he has told them that I had just graduated from university and I didn't have anybody to celebrate with me and blah blah. And then when I was like, okay, 7 o'clock, come downstairs to the hotel lobby. The thing is, the hotel has been rented out for the wedding, so there were no extra guests, just the wedding party. So we had the restaurant, everything to ourselves. They're like, come down to the restaurant for dinner. It's at 7. I said, okay. So I got there. I slept. I guess I was jet lagged, exhausted. I don't know, but I just slept. I woke up by 5:30, showered. It was a beautiful weather, warm, nice. The hotel was by the beach, you know, but there was a big sea water behind the hotel. So I went downstairs to the restaurant. And there was this massive balloon that was congratulations, happy graduation. I was shocked. Like, these people don't even know me. And then I started crying again. And they're like, why are you crying? I'm like, sorry. I'm just happy. And then I wasn't expecting that. It was amazing to feel loved again. To feel like you're not alone. It was great. There was a cake. We had. They were singing. Congratulations. You know, everybody was just merry and happy. And then the whole wedding party was on. You know. At one point, I and Ifeanyi's wife and Paul's wife and Ifeanyi's wife's best friend, we all friend, she came with her daughter. She's the cutest little girl ever. Her name is Kemi. You know, like, we just, you know, sat down, talked, and then Kemi's mom, Funke, disappeared. I was like, Kemi was like, oh, you see my mommy? So I carried her on my lap, and then the two ladies looked at each other and smiled. I'm like, your mom is talking to Uncle Jay down there. So she'll be back, okay? Okay. So the girl ran off and said, and they turned to me and I'm like, Uncle Jay? And Jason. Well, are they a couple? Like, yeah, we don't know yet though, but we are suspecting. Can't you feel the spark? As in there's this electricity, it's like this place is about to go off in flames. We started laughing. And Casey were like, it wouldn't be a bad idea. Or like, I've never seen Jason so nervous whenever I see him around Kemi. At the same time, excited. I don't know how to explain it. I've known Jason for a while. Okay, he's this jovial, funny guy that makes everybody laugh. He's fun to be around, but there's something that Kemi brings, Funke brings out in him that I've never seen. There's a part of him that is just being exposed right now. And we all laugh. Like, it wouldn't be a bad idea if they both hook up, though. These men are marriageable age. Very soon, one by one, God is taking them off the market. And we just laugh. So, the wedding was beautiful. It was the most beautiful ceremony. I wasn't in the wedding party because, well, I don't know them that much. I attended the wedding and something wasn't among the, it was a friend of the groom, but he was busy with, you know, the preparation and everything. So he wasn't among the groomsmen. It wasn't a very long wedding party, you know. Family, it was very intimate, very cute and classy and beautiful. And after the whole thing, we went back home and so something has to go back to Gabon. And I had to move on with my life, you know. But we did keep in touch. We kept in touch. As in he, with time, I got back to Lagos. I rented myself a place. I decided to stay in Lagos. So he was like, why don't you just stay in my house? I'm never here. I'm like, I can't just live off you now. It doesn't seem right. And besides, your house is too big for one person. I'm just going to rent a little flat somewhere close to wherever I get a job. And I said, I can sort that out. At least allow me to help you get a job. Like, I won't mind. I really need a job. Even though I have money. But even though you have money to that, you can live off of it. But I didn't study 5 years in university just to come out and sit down and start eating my parents' money. Please, it's my money, yes, but you know, I wanna experience what it's like to work. I studied, actually. So that's the reason why I went to school. I'm like, good point. So, through his connection, he helped me to find a job in a car company. I put one of, this car called Peugeot. They have a company in Nigeria. I was working with Peugeot, you know, it was exciting, male-dominated, but it was fun. I liked it. I liked getting my hands dirty. I didn't start from the top executive. I started in the, you know, assembly line. That's it. And I enjoyed coming out greasy, you know, but I promised myself I was going to walk my way to the top, you know, gather experience and gather knowledge and just keep going. And that's what I'm steadily doing. From time to time, especially around my parents' anniversary period, I get a relapse. I feel extremely down. But I always had someone to call, and that was Samson. I would call him. I'll tell him how my day is going and how sad I am. I wish my parents were alive to see me now. You know, sometimes I do talk to them in my mind. You know, And when I pray, I have this habit of saying, God, give mama a kiss for me. I know it doesn't work like that, but it just feels right saying it. And give dad a hug for me. You know, I miss them. But something told me something. He said, look, this experience didn't kill you. Okay? You survived. And the worst thing you can do to yourself is allow fear to keep you rooted at one spot. You've been through the worst of it. Now, do not let fear hold you back. You've overcome the craziest, most bizarre thing that can ever happen to a human being. You were kidnapped. You were starved. You were trafficked. Luckily for you, you were given to me. But you get my point. Yeah. And he said, yes. He said, then I need you to get out there and take the world by the collar. You get my point? You go head on. Don't get scared. If you ever feel scared, call me. But I want you to remember that the Bible says that the Lord hasn't given us the spirit of fear. Fear is the spirit. So once you start to feel scared, rebuke it. Okay? Rebuke it in the name of Jesus. And move on. You are the most amazing, strongest young lady I've ever met. Thank you. Sometimes I don't feel that strong. I don't feel like I deserve what I have. Like, oh, you do deserve it. God knows what he was doing. God always has a plan. I need to always remember that. No matter what you're going through, God always had a plan. So I thought that, like, do you know that I haven't been able to take a taxi alone in a long time, right? And so how do you get to work? I said, well, I bought a car and I hired a driver. I just paid someone that would drive me to work and bring me back home and park the car. I had everything done. He was like, okay, why don't you just learn to drive? Yeah, I haven't figured out how to do that yet, but I think you're right. I need to learn to drive. Okay? So wasting money. Although I see it as creating employment. He laughed. He said, you need me to teach you how to drive? I said, I could never learn from you. What? You're too distracting. He said, well, I can be serious. I said, yes, I know. But I don't want to learn from you. I will go to a driving school and get my driver's license. Okay? He said, good. So when I come back to Nigeria, you'll be driving because you'll come and pick me from the airport. I said, is that a bet? He said, oh, okay, let's go. I said, how much? He said, oh, you have each other. You, with all your money, I will eat your money. He said, I said, I'm not betting money with you, Joe. I said, okay, you know what? I'll strike a deal with you. When are you coming back to Nigeria? He said, oh, it's going to be a while. I'm not due to be in that Nigeria for another 3 months. I'm like, okay. And I'm telling you that when you're coming to Nigeria, I'll pick you up at the airport. Don't call your driver. Just send me your arrival time. I'll pick you up. So that really, yeah. What he didn't know was that I'd already started learning to drive. Even though I was too chicken, I was not that strong. My driver was teaching me, but now I had to go and register in a proper driving school and learn. And when he was coming back, he called and like, okay, I'm in Nigeria. He was coming for the Christmas holiday. I'm coming to see my friend. Apparently, another one of my guys is getting married. I'm like, let me guess. Jason and Funke. I'm like, yeah, how do you know? Like, I kept in touch with ladies. I know what's going on. So I'm like, okay, well, apparently, they're getting married. So, I'll be back for Christmas. I'm like, oh, that would be lovely. It'd be nice to see you again. Like, you know the funniest thing. Not the funny thing, but the truth. I said, well, I really miss you. I'm like, oh, I said, no, seriously. I don't know why. But I miss being around you a lot. And I think we need to talk about that when I come. I said, okay. And anyway, when are you coming into town? So I'll be in Nigeria on the 12th of December. I said, okay. I'll pick you up. So when he came I was at the airport waiting. And I'm like, so where's our ride? I said, there. I had this very cute little, you know, this Kia Picanto. So like, of all the cars, I said, no, it feels safe. You know, what do you mean? Like, it's cute. You know, like, how am I? Do you know how tall I am? I said, I didn't think of that. Like, I'm practically going to have to squeeze myself inside this your car. Like, I did not think about that. I'm sorry. You're like, oh God, if the guys can just see me in this car, they will so laugh. Like, okay, promise, I won't drive past their place. Like, you better not. And we laugh. But it wasn't that small, I think. He wasn't that squeezed in inside the car. But you get the picture. But I like my cute little Picanto Kia. Girl, you have to change this car. Please. Get something a normal human being can drive. Giant like us. So that we can be comfortable. Or just like that was the trip. And, you know, we spent the whole trip back to his house chatting about his Gabon experience and everything. You know, like, another thing I didn't tell you was that I am done with my mission in Gabon. I'm like, really? That's nice. Yeah. So, for the time being, until I have another assignment, I'm going to be in Nigeria. I'm like, wow, okay. That's nice. He said, yeah, it is nice. Because I want to spend this time with you. And I was quiet. I'm like, I don't understand. I want to get to know you. I want to believe I know you to an extent. I spent every day talking to you since I left. And in my mind, you are much more than a friend. And I'm praying that it's the same for you. I was like, well, like, no, I'm not trying to push you into what you don't want to do, but I'm like, yeah, it's the same for me. Like, excuse me? I'm like, well, okay, fine, I like you. It was like, so why is it kind of, sort of, like, it's kind of weird for me to be telling you first. You should tell me first. Tell you what? I looked at him. He laughed, like, can't you tell by now that I'm crazy about you? Like, you didn't say anything. You've always, like, treated me like a friend. Because I didn't know how to, I didn't want to scare you away. I'd rather you be my friend than not knowing you or being in your life, you know what I mean? Like, I get it. So like, but seriously, you've come to mean so much to me, and it's not because of, I mean, how God brought us together, but after I got to know you, you were beautiful, but inside and out. And I want to see where, I'm hoping that this was God's plan. I'm still praying about it. And I was just wondering if we could both pray and see where this leads, you know? We could start dating while I'm in Nigeria. Like, okay, we can do that. And I also have a mini assignment to do in a church. And like, where? No, I'm still in Lagos. You know the funny thing? Coincidentally, turns out to be the Lagos branch of the church my father was a pastor in. When he told me the name, I was shocked. Like, what? Like, my father used to be a head senior pastor in the Port Harcourt branch of that church. I'm like, yeah, you said something like that. Yes, my father is pastor, so and so. I'm like, yeah, I can't believe I forgot. Yes, that's true. Oh, wow, how amazing. Like, I haven't been to that church in a long while. Like, well, I'm not gonna force you to go, but that's where my assignment is. And since we are seeing each other, you might have to eventually set foot there. Like, anyway, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm glad it doesn't matter. And so that's how Samson and I started courting. We courted for about, by this time, we've known each other for close to a year. So we dated each other for another year. And then by the time his new assignment was brought up, we were already engaged to be married. And by the end of that second year, there was another Brothers for Christ wedding happening in Nigeria. Because this time I had made peace with my family members, my mom's siblings, my dad's family. I was going to get married. Someone has to give me away. So it was a long process, but long and short, the short version is, I reached out to them. Till date, no one knows what I've been through. No one knew about my kidnapping and anything. I reached out to them and them. And, well, my dad's brother, even though he knew that he was at the wrong, and me being the only child of his brother and he hasn't really cared about me, he apologized. And we made peace. And he was the one who gave me away on my wedding day. And that was how I married my church boy, my missionary, the love of my life, the one that God arranged specially for me. I married him. I married Mr. Samson Ortega. I became Mrs. Ortega. Mrs. Bimbo Ortega. I hope you enjoyed the story. I enjoyed telling it. And I hope it touched someone. Thanks for listening.